You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk and show number 397. Today is April 14th, Saturday, and my name is Hamilton. So due to vacations, bachelor parties, and other weather-related events, we're doing the show on a Saturday night, and we're doing it without Stevie again. So it's just me and Curtis. Curtis, how are you?
I am well.
You are well. So here's the truth, folks. If Stevie was on the show this week, it would mean that we would lose an extra year of eligibility of Stevie. So we're waiting a week to bring him back to the fold to ensure that we get one more year of him before he moves to the Phillies podcast with a new contract. So it's just Curtis and me this week, and we're going to do the best we can. Imagine that Kurt is Preston Tucker, I'm Ryan Flaherty, and Steve is Ronald Acuna.
I feel like you're more of a Peter Borges.
Thank you. What's the Borges the steak joke?
That's it.
That's it. I think I just told it. I just landed it right there.
You did. Nailed it.
Nailed it. All right. Anyway, before we carry on with all this fantastic stuff, remember, folks, find us, as always, at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Find us at BlogTalkRadio.com. Follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk. Check out our Facebook page and spread the word. Go to iTunes. Give us a 100-star review. Stitcher, wherever you find us, tell them you're our favorite. It takes 2 seconds. It would mean a lot to us. And make sure you retweet all of our show announcements, all of that. All right, so.
You're very needy tonight.
I need it. Saturday night. I'm usually needier on a Saturday night. Sunday nights is different.
Sure.
But you know how it goes. So, right. So without Steve Acuna tonight, we're going to talk about Ronald Acuna. We'll discuss the greatness that is Kurt Suzuki. We'll revel in Osby Swanbees. And I promise you, I will not come up with any new nicknames. And we'll worry just a bit about our closer situation. But first, before we do all of that, let's take a quick break. So, Curtis, I think we can all agree that we want Ronald Acuna here now. But then some funny things happened. The first is that Preston Tucker has become the three-run homer machine. And at the same time, Ronald is not having – and I'm calling him Ronald is not gotten off to the greatest start in AAA. So let's set the scene here. Acuna in 32 plate appearances in AAA, 2 runs, 4 hits only, with 1 stolen base, 3 bases on balls, and 10 strikeouts. So his slash line is 139, 219, 172. Not phenom worthy, I would say. Meanwhile, Tucker, 43 plate appearances, 11 runs, 22 hits, 8 doubles, 1 triple, 4 homers for a line of 308, 349, 550. So, Curtis, the question is, what do we do here? And let's do it a fair foul. So, fair foul, Curtis, you bring up Acuna and you start him Monday against the Phillies.
I think you still stay on the same track. I mean, I know that you just outlined all the things that are going on, and Acuna and Johan Camargo and Rio Ruiz and Dustin Peterson, they're all getting off to terrible starts in Gwinnett right now, and you can't deny what Preston Tucker has been doing, but they even said that Acuna is pressing, that they feel like he's pressing. So why he's pressing? I mean, of all people that you would feel like wouldn't put themselves in a position where they're pressing, knowing that, you know, it's all there for them.
Right.
But I mean, he's a kid. He's, you know, it's dealing with the pressure of being in the position that he's in. So I think that maybe even to help bring the pressure off of him, you just proceed as you would have expected. I mean, if Acuna's obviously batting 350 right now, this conversation, we're not having this conversation because
at all. And if Tucker is batting 250, right?
But even with Preston Tucker doing what he's doing, I don't think you're having the conversation, because if Acuna's batting 350, you're like, of course, he's ready to go. Let's bring him up. We got all that stuff for the contract and all that nonsense out of the way. And so let's just bring him up and let him start his career.
Right.
And so I think that the best thing that could happen to him is you say, look, we understand. And I mean, they were saying also that like the with the minor league season starting so late that like they had the Legends game that he played in. And then it was like 9 or 10 days before he played again. So it's like as hot as he was, they just then he was put in a position where he wasn't playing baseball. So it's like, you know, maybe they're just catching back up to speed here. And you just hope that it's that's all it is. But I don't know. What was the fair and the foul? The fair is
That you bring him up. No, the fair is you said fair.
I'm
with you, too. I say you do it. I think he showed in spring training and single A, double A, triple A, as Arizona Fall League. And I did say Arizona. I think he showed that he's got it right. He's going to struggle. There's going to be an adjustment when he comes up to the majors. Just do it now. I mean, Tucker is doing great, continues to produce, but Acuña is the future. Tucker is not the future. So just begin that now, right? And let Tucker be the amazing, surprising bench piece that we need him to be. But I don't think you gain anything by giving Acuña more time in Gwinnett. I just don't think you do. So begin that now. It's
Talked about it, and you can still work Tucker into the rotation.
Sure.
You can give Acuña a day off of the during the week. You can give Markakis a couple of days off, whatever you need to do to keep Preston Tucker in there and, you know, just solve the issue that way.
Yeah. And I think that – I mean, I agree with you. It's an interesting – baseball is so mental, right? And I think Acuña was the chosen one for forever, and then there was all this news about – keeping him down, and then was it about, you know, service time manipulation? And then Snitker and Anthopoulos come out and say, well, actually, we want to make sure that he's ready. And so who knows what they did to his psyche. He is ready. He has proven that. Baseball is not based on 15-game sample sets, right, which is what we're looking at now. I mean, baseball is years and years, and he has shown that he is the future. He's got all the tools. He is projecting to be better than Albies, who is our best player right now. So let's just get going on it and don't get cute, right? Don't get cute with this. Yes. All right, I think we're both fair. I imagine that Steve would say the same. All right, well, let's look at Kurt Suzuki. So let's go to the other end of the spectrum here. So Kurt Suzuki, his the other amazing Kurt.
It's true.
Yes, you're welcome. So this season, his slash, and this is including with the injury, you know, that hard pitch that he got hit with, his slash line is 259, 355, 519, and essentially has won a couple of games for us by himself. So let's go fair or foul here, Kurt. Kurt Suzuki is our number one catcher over Tyler Flowers, even if he's healthy.
Well, I guess that I might have a foul on that just because of what a great compliment they were with each other last year. Flowers obviously is not played effectively a game. I mean, what did he got through like
one
three
game.
Or four innings of the
yep.
first game
yep.
and then was out. So you hope that the magic is still there for him for another season too, like it is for Suzuki. And I just, because of how great that tandem was last year, I don't think that you really need to make a situation where you have a number one guy or a number two guy. I mean, those guys, and they're older, so they don't need to be catching every day. I'm assuming Carlos Perez will be, I guess they could keep him around. They had three catchers on the
Chris
roster
Stewart.
Before. Yeah, right. But they sent him down, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. We have a lot of catchers all of a sudden. None of them are, you know, rookies who project to be for the future of the team, but that's all right.
Right. Yeah. I think that you let Flowers come back at the pace that he needs to come back at. But once he's back, you platoon him just like you have before. I think that's the best solution.
Yeah. I mean, Fangraphs says that they have this Fangraphs has this curve that basically says when starting at age 27, you start to deteriorate as a catcher. Right. And so Suzuki is 34 years old. Flowers is 32 years old. So both of these guys are on the other side of that curve. So I'm with you a little bit. I mean, I think that I think ultimately Kurt Suzuki last year proved to be more valuable than Flowers, and I think he is showing early on that he still has some of that situational pop when we need him. He's able to hit the homers. I think he hit 17 homers last year or something. Surprising number of homers. It looks like he could do that, something like that again this year. I think it will be more than Flowers. So, I think if it was down to one game, if we were in a wild card, like right now, if the playoffs started, we're in a wild card with the Phillies to make the postseason. I would start Suzuki over Flowers, but I'm with you. I think it's no need to say that one of them is better than the others. But thank God for Kurt Suzuki, is the bottom line here. Very productive for us. I think he is. He's done well, but framing the pitchers and sort of on the defensive side or the pitch calling side of the ball as well, and obviously offensively. Thank God for him. I mean, who would we have? Betancourt, Stewart, Perez. So I'm glad we have him, but I think you're right. I think that, we're not in a place to say he is our number one catcher, but now for the fifth time, thank God for Kurt Suzuki. And thank God for you, Kurt.
That's true.
Yes.
Me and him and Kurt Cobain.
All the Kurts.
Right.
All right, Curtis, last one. So much has been said. Much has been said about our middle infield. And if you think about before Acuña really came on the radar, the future of the Braves was really Dansby and Ozzie, right? And we started to call them Ozzie Swansby, maybe. Maybe that was just me.
Perhaps
it was just me. I'm going to go on a limb and say it wasn't just me, but maybe there was only one other person. But they were our future, right? And then it looked bleak, I got to say. So we saw Dansby come up. He was amazingly hot for the little time that we saw him in 2016. And then he had, for lack of a better word, a train wreck in 2017. And then Albies has that unfortunate injury. And so all of a sudden, this rock solid, core middle infield of the Braves' future is in question. But now, let's take a look at where we are now. So Dansby is slashing .340, .377, .560, and is just an offensive force and shows no signs of slowing down. Meanwhile, Ozzie, who had a bit of a slow start, but since the Colorado series has slashed, and sit down for this, Curtis, because I know you do the show standing up and undressed, .400, .419, .900. With 3 homers, 6 doubles, amazing defense, and just he is winning games for us. He is the best player on the team. And I think it's hands down. I mean, obviously, Freddie is always there, blah, blah, blah. But Ozzie is the best Brave right now. All-star quality play. So let's end with the fair or foul. These are the guys. This is the core rock solid all-star middle infield on which all of our success is built upon tandem that we thought they would be. Are you bought in?
Yeah. I mean, and it's all about, baseball people always talk about building. You want to build up the middle. And with Ender behind them in center field, that's a pretty good trio to have. Obviously the concerns were there about Dansby a lot. You mentioned the injury to Ozzie that we were really worried about because of the elbow and all that kind of stuff. It's been amazing. I mean, amazing. you only hope that we talked about it last week that, the height they're at right now, you don't expect that's going to last where it is all season long. But I mean, the productivity from these guys, and maybe, it's just them finally being back together and healthy and playing together. I mean, I know that they've sort of cultivated them and, you know, at one point they like moved Dansby back down so he could play with Ozzy in that. Am I remembering that right? Like yeah. He was up in Gwinnett and they moved him back down to Mississippi or something so he could play with Ozzy.
Yep.
Maybe there's just that chemistry between those guys and it's just bringing, you know, maybe they're just this friendly competition that they're working off of with each other. And that's what's
well, it's
you
like,
know, spurring all this on.
It's like Correa and Altuve in Houston.
Right. Right.
I mean, those guys came up together and all stars together. And absolutely sorry to cut you off. But
no, that's all right. And, yeah. And it's like it's like when Freeman and Hayward came up and Hayward was getting all the publicity, but Freeman was the better player. And, you know, Dansby and I think unfortunately for him got all that publicity
last year.
Yeah. And, you know, it was basically the face of the franchise last year, even over Freddie. And then Ozzy comes up and there's really not, you know, I mean, Ozzy is not prominently featured in stuff, you know, I mean, it's not like he's their poster boy or anything like that. He does get his own bobblehead, the yep. Lando Calrissian, Ozzy Calrissian bobblehead, which is pretty awesome.
Yep.
But, you know, it's almost better to sort of work in the shadows, you know, I mean, you thrive without having the scrutiny thrust upon you as much as you do if you're the guy that's getting all the attention.
Yeah. I just I think it's – there's so many great situations here. I mean, I think Ozzy's taking all the pressure off of Dansby, right? I mean, Dansby had all the pressure on him, and I think he continued to feel it. And with Ozzy coming up, I think you're absolutely right. It just – you know, now there's someone else who's supposed to be the future and a cog in this future piece. And so, like, it's not just me, right? Because last year – I mean, it was just him, right? It was Ender and Markakis and there was just and Freddie, a lot of older pieces, and then the young guy Dansby, and now he's got company. So I think that just takes some of the pressure off of him, like you said. I am amazed by Ozzy. I don't know. I didn't expect it to be this good this fast. I think, and maybe because I didn't see him a lot, I didn't expect him to have this power. I didn't expect him to be slugging 900. Yeah. I mean, I think I thought he was going to be just a wizard defender. I thought he was going to hit for a high average, a singles machine. But he is a force to be reckoned with. I mean, I think his ceiling, and this is as a Braves fan and a podcast host, is higher than Altuve's. I think he's got the potential for more power. I think he's more of a five-tool player. I mean, the play he made against the Nationals, or maybe it was the Cubs last night, ranging to his left, and just that amazing play. Like, he's got it all. He's a surprise, and he shouldn't be a surprise because he's – I mean, we've been talking about him forever, but even with all the hype – and maybe the injury tempered the sum. He's a revelation. And he just gets me so – he, more than anyone, feels like the most untradeable Brave right now. Right? And maybe you say Cunha's not come up and Dansby and Freddie. But, like, for Ozzy, I knew he was going to be great. I didn't think that I would value him as much as I do right now. And I honestly think, like, if you put a gun to my head and say you have to give up every Brave but one and you're thinking about the long-term success of the team, Ozzy is right there at the top of the list, and that's surprising to me.
Sure. Yeah, well, and it creates sort of a, you know, compelling good problem to have because Ender was obviously out. He didn't play today. But, you know, you had Albies and Swanson batting 1-2. They go 6-for-11 with 6 RBI, 4 runs scored. That's, you know, that's all they managed to do today.
Yeah.
And so then when you bring Ender back, and I know Ender's sort of struggled, but he's a guy that has slow starts in his career. But, I mean, it's just – it makes the lineup more dynamic. And, I mean, Markakis is still batting right around 300. Suzuki obviously is there. So that the depth of the lineup is something that we sort of haven't seen in the while.
Yeah.
That you could sort of stack guys. You know, I mean, I remember joking about it being at a game a couple of years ago And I think they were playing the Giants, and it was like every guy on the Giants was batting like 285 or above, and every dude on the Braves, save maybe one, was batting like 230 or below.
Well, I remember when we went to that Nate McClouth game where he hit the walk-off homer, where we had all those homers in the game against the Phillies. It felt like everyone in the Phillies was hitting over 300, and everyone on the Braves was hitting below 220.
Yeah.
So, but you just said it right there. I mean, you know, we're not there yet, and I don't think when Acuna comes up, he's going to be part of that. But Ender, Ozzy, Dansby, Freddie, Acuna. Those are five guys, right? I mean, then you throw in Markakis, you throw in Camargo. I'm going to just make up people's names now. Camargo, Suzuki. All of a sudden, very quickly, and this is not a long way off, this is an offense to be reckoned with. And then you know, you look at what Newcomb did today. Obviously, Ramirez, you know, blew it up, and Freeman and Jackson and those guys. We're right there, dude. We are.
But you also, and one last point on this, I mean, you think about also that, like, we talked about it last week or a couple of weeks ago, the nucleus that you're sort of building here. I mean, you got these are young guys, you know, Freeman and Albies and Dansby and Acuna.
Going
you
know, Riley, you've got, maybe.
Yeah, you've got other guys that are in the mix too. Peterson,
yep.
You know, Alex Jackson, some guys that are in the pipeline to fill some of these other spots. And it's pretty exciting that, that these guys are coming. It's nice because it seems like it's been a while where we got guys that came up that produced, you know. I mean, there were some guys that we were really high on, and they didn't really do anything when they got up here.
Yeah.
That we heard about for a while, and it's exciting to see them. And I know this is a small sample size. It's only 14 games or something like that, but it's pretty fun.
Well, and
even despite the game today.
Yeah. Well, that was a couple pitchers, right? But the offense was obviously there early
on. Yeah, you still scored 10 runs, right?
Yeah, early.
15 hits and 10 runs.
Yeah. And D.O.B. had he tweeted out the lineup from, I guess, a year ago today, and it was,
awful.
Ibar, Francoeur, I can't even remember some of the other people's on there, but such a different lineup and nothing that you're building off of. And then all the guys you just said we're building a team here. We're building a franchise. It's just very exciting. So let's examine one last piece of this before we go to break. The pen, right? So, and I just quickly talked about it. So today Ramirez gave up 135 runs, roughly. I'm estimating here. I don't have the stats in front of me. Jackson didn't look great. Freeman didn't look great. We have Vizcaino who blew a save recently. I don't know if there's a fair or foul here. How are you feeling about our bullpen and the pieces that we've got? Who do you want to keep? Who do you want to get rid of? Are we sort of close? Work in progress? What do you think, Curtis?
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen had been pretty good up until today. So you feel like you don't want to overreact to one, really. I mean, there's definitely some guys. Jose Ramirez has not been really very good at all.
Great stuff. 175 miles an hour. I'm making up again stats, but
not Luke reliable. Jackson has not been good, but everybody else, you know, it was just one of those days. I mean, it was like 28 degrees at the game. I mean, it's impossible to get your head around the fact that in a major league game, 9 runs were scored on 3 hits.
Yeah.
I mean, that's seriously, I tweeted about it. That is as little league as it. I was, in fact, I was at a batting lesson for my youngest son today and saw a dad who I'm friendly with. And his son was also there getting a lesson. And he was lamenting the fact that his son's team is good, but the pitchers won't throw strikes. And so they'll have innings where they give up 2 hits and they give up 7 runs.
Yep.
And we laughed about that. And then we saw it almost impossibly on a major league level. I mean, you look at these numbers here. I am looking at the numbers. So Newcomb pitched pretty well, gave up 2 earned runs through 5. Then Winkler pitched an inning and two-thirds, gave up two runs. Jackson pitched a third of an inning, gave up two runs. Jose Ramirez pitched a third of an inning, gave up five runs. Ugh. Freeman gave up two runs, one earned. Three base on balls.
And then two base on balls.
Yeah, they hit two batters. I mean, it's just impossible. And I know that it gets cold and it's tough to throw a baseball.
And that feeds on itself, right? One, I mean, you feel the pressure mounts every pitcher that comes in. Yeah.
And it's easy to say they just needed to throw strikes because clearly they couldn't. But when you're up 10-4, you really just got to throw strikes.
You got to win those games and trust your defense.
And I mean, you go through a season where you play 162 games, you're going to blow big leads. You're going to have terrible, you know, you're going to have a walk off or what, you know, I mean, that's just going to happen over the course of a season.
Yeah.
So you hope that, but I mean, this, you don't want to feel like this is something more because it's just so glaring and so bad. You took the ability for your teammates to do anything for you completely out of it. And I mean, I said it today. It's like when you, again, to refer to Little League, like when you get to the bottom of the lineup on the other teams, you know, and the kids that like have their helmet on backwards,
wearing
sneakers or something like that, you know, and it's like all you have to do is throw them strikes because there's literally no chance that they're doing anything with
it. Take 15 miles off of it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you walk that kid and then get back to the top of the lineup of the guy who's hitting, you know, 950 or something like that. And it's just like, you just got to get that kid out, And that's sort of what I felt today. It's like just you got Hayward twice in the inning and you hit him with a pitch and you walked him, which is just like impossible.
Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, Newcomb, as good as he looked, like you can't, he needs some support, right? He's not at the point where he's going to go eight innings. Yeah. I mean, you need those guys to come in.
Well, and we definitely need, to touch on that, the point that you just made, we need, and I know it's still early in the season, we need some of these starters to start going past five innings.
Yeah.
Well, asking the bullpen to do four innings every single day is sort of a tall task.
I know. I mean, they're going five innings, throwing 100 or 90 to 100 pitches. It's, you know, hopefully we see that change as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, Newcomb got through five on 109 pitches.
Yeah.
So
still looks good though. I mean, still looks good. You know, so I'm encouraged by that. I don't know if I trust Vizcaino.
I'm curious to see how much longer he gets, and when they move Minter into the closer's job.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, we've talked about this repeatedly. Ruiz had his chance, Blair had his chance, Whistler had his chance. You know, you give these guys chances, and obviously, when you're going through transition or you're sort of you know, bottoming out, those guys get more chances than maybe you might when you're trying to compete. Are we close to the end of the chances that Vizcaino gets? He's got amazing stuff, and when he looks good, he looks great. I mean, he looks really good. Devastating fastball, and when he's able to locate, you know, I feel like he's up there with all the other closers, but I feel like he's running out of chances, and I'm losing faith in him.
Sure, and it's understandable, but I guess you wonder, I mean, because in theory it would be a demotion, like how he handled. I mean, I think he'd be a great setup guy, great eighth inning guy, but it's like how would he handle the fact that he basically lost his closer's job? So,
well, I think we'll see that play out.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. So we're going to talk about shots in the dark and the week ahead in just a minute, but let's take a quick break. All right, so as I said at the top of the show, we're recording this on a Saturday night, and so we're going to mix this up a little bit. We have not had a chance for all of our shots in the dark to take place. Curtis, your shot in the dark is contingent on Tehran's start tomorrow night. Mine is around Flaherty and Tucker and their week. Steve talked about Freddie hitting four homers. So here's what's going to happen. We're mixing it up, a little curveball. We're not going to announce the winners on the Shots in the Dark this week, and I can't say Shots in the Dark. That's fine. It's Saturday night. We're going to we're going to announce those winners through Twitter tomorrow night. Just so folks are listening along, our Greg Innes, who is one of our fans and a Twitter follower, he said that the Braves would take sole possession of first on Sunday. Spoiler alert, that's not going to happen because the Mets are playing insane baseball. Damn them all to hell. So anyway, in terms of checking in our Shots in the Dark this week, we will do that through Twitter, so stay tuned and follow us on Twitter. But let's take a look at next week, Curtis. Before we even get there, before we even finish this week, we're looking at next week. And so I'm going to start with Steve's Shot in the Dark for next week. And just so everyone knows, Shot in the Dark, crazy predictions for what happens next week. We make our predictions, and at the end of the week, we'll check back in and see how we did. So Curtis, nope. I get you and Steve confused. Steve's, sure. Yeah, because you sound alike. Steve's crazy prediction is that the Braves will sweep the four-game series with the Mets. And so, Greg Innes, if you had only submitted your Shot in the Dark next week, and then Steve's Shot in the Dark came true, you guys would both be winners. But it will just have to be Steve. All right, Curtis, for me, I'll go first, and then you can finish it. I think that Ozzie is going to continue his torrid streak. I say he hits two homers, three doubles, and one triple next week. What do you got for your Shot in the Dark?
Well, we just talked about him. You also just sort of picked him, but I'm going with the – what was it? Osby Swansby's. Osby Swansby's hitting over 330 with six RBI, which seems soft considering what they did today. Yeah, but
that's one game for Ozzy.
They also have to face the Mets starting pitching. So
if Steve was here, he would call that soft. But this is
that's right.
It's a tolerant week. I'm going to let you have it.
I want a koozie.
Yes, since they're all in your basement.
It's true.
I'm just assuming your whole family just drinks out of ABT koozies all
week. The 10-year-old has constantly got a beer in his hand.
But you can't see it because it's camouflaged.
That's true.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so folks, this show's going out. We'll put out a Twitter reminder, but please submit your Shots in the Dark. And as Kurt said, we will pick one Shot in the Dark to follow during the week. And if you hit it exactly, you will win a prize. And the prize is a glorious ABT koozie straight from Kurt's basement.
It's true.
With the smell, with the scent of Kurt's basement in the koozie. All right.
Sort of mothballs and patchouli.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay. That's actually not what I would have guessed, but that's better than what I would have guessed. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Right.
All right, Curtis. So we've got seven games this week against the Phillies and the Mets, all of a homestand at STP. Let's hope Julio doesn't pitch any of those games. I imagine he will.
Yes.
One can only imagine that he will. But anyway, Curtis, break it down for us. What are our pitching matchups for this week?
Three against the Phillies, who seemed like we're just in Atlanta. So we get Folty against Aaron Nola, who's having a very good season, 1-0 with a 1.96 ERA.
That one win coming against the Braves.
Indeed.
Yep.
Wasn't he in the game when they
That's right. Yep. That was our opening day. Sorry.
Because the guy who actually has the win is the next starter, Nick Pivetta.
Yes.
Who sounds like an extra from The Sopranos. Yep. He is 1-0 and has a 2.70 ERA. And then we get Vince Velasquez, who we sort of slapped around when he Brandon McCarthy against Pivetta. Sanchez against Vince Velasquez. Velasquez 1-1 with a 3.52 ERA. See, I throw myself off and then it just goes to hell.
Yep.
Then we get the Mets. And the Mets have sort of a lot of things going in the right direction for the Mets starting pitching in that they are all pitching. So Newcomb against Matt Harvey, 0-0 with a 3.60 ERA, which seems like he's pitched better. He had one really good game and one not so great game. Then it's Tehran at home, the aforementioned home start for Tehran.
Friday night, you'll be there with your
son. I will be there against Noah Syndergaard, with sort of a big ERA for him, 2-0, but a 3.94 ERA. I think they scored a bunch of runs for him. It doesn't get any easier. Then it's Folty against Jacob DeGrom, who is 2-0 with a 3.06 ERA. And then Brandon McCarthy's second start of the week, our ace, Brandon McCarthy. Yeah. No name listed. I'm assuming it will be one of Gesselman, Wheeler, or Mats. Gesselman is 1-0 with a or Gesellman, however you want to say his name. He's 1-0 with a 1.23 ERA. Zach Wheeler is 1-0 with a 1.29 ERA. Stephen Matz, 1-1 with a 3.77 ERA. So there is your, as Ham likes to call it, the poo-poo platter options for Mets starters in game four of that series. And Gesellman always pitches well against us, so maybe we hope that it's not him.
I just did not count on the Mets being this good. I mean, they're putting it all together. I don't think anybody did, but man.
Yeah, who have they played? I guess, I mean, have they played anybody that's any good, or are they just sort of beating up on the Phillies?
I can't answer that. But they're scoring a lot of runs. I mean, I think you can look at the stats of, like, you know, DeGrom and Syndergaard and all those guys, the mid threes to high threes. Some of them are 0-0, 1-0, and they're still 11-1, 12-1, right? They're just winning games. So they're scoring runs. They're doing whatever it takes, right, and winning games. And
11-2.
Sorry. Thank you for that. Yeah. It's interesting in the NL East, though, right? The Phillies, as of tonight, and this was, I guess, even before tonight's games, they were a half game behind us. The Mets were right up there. The Nats not doing so well. And there's another team in the division I forget about, as is everybody else.
Right. Who are already 7.5 games out.
Yeah. So exciting stuff, though. Good baseball.
Turns out I should have picked the Angels to win the World Series this year.
Ohtani, what a story.
Yeah.
What a story. All right, guys. So, again, thank you for listening. Check us out on Twitter, because there will be a call to action around our shots in the dark for this week. And there's a koozie on the line. And that's it. Again, thanks for listening. Check us out at www.atlantabaseballtalk.com. You can find us on blogtalkradio.com. We are on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk, on Facebook, and all over the web. So thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week, and go Braves.
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.